Hi, everybody. I forgot my gavel today, so I needed to get some frustration out today anyway, so this is good. Let's go ahead and bring the March meeting of the University Senate to order. Our first order of business is the February meeting minutes. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes? Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion on these minutes? Okay. This is the only discussion that I have on those minutes, and this is not to alter those minutes at all. This is just a note of clarification for the record for the March minutes. So this will be on the March minutes, just as a clarification of record. And this came from Merrill Price, who was a part of some of the conversation from our previous Senate meeting. And she just wanted to indicate a single clarification, and I think this is just a factual clarification. The only South Campus faculty who are moving to the main campus are the faculty in liberal arts and sciences, and that they will be moving their tenure homes but will still have offices at South Campus and continue to teach classes there. So there was some concern over the facts about that. Any further discussion on those minutes? Okay. All those in favor in approval of the minutes as posted, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thanks very much. Just a few things for you, and most of this is kind of within the agenda, and as we go through the agenda, I'll just point out a couple of things that are in the information items here ahead of time, and that is that we have the at-large Senate election results that are there, so I'll just go ahead and bring these up now. The at-large Senate election results for 2014-2016 are posted. Thanks to everyone who participated in those elections, and special thanks to our Vice Chair, Jennifer Hanley, who did an excellent job running those elections. That is certainly a major task. And so we appreciate her efforts for that. The other thing that is posted under information items is with respect to WKU General Counsel Deborah Wilkins, there is a post of an email back and forth that I had with her, and this is a follow-up to a previous request that was made at Senate for her to come and discuss IT policies related to requests for electronic discovery. She has agreed to come and speak with us at the April 17th Senate meeting, so the next month meeting. She was unavailable today, but we'll be here on April 17th, so we'll hear from her first thing at that particular Senate meeting as an invited speaker. That, I think, is it for my chair report for today. Vice Chair Jennifer Hanley, anything to report?
No, just that at-large Senate election results are in, and thank you everyone who participated. It is appreciated, and your service is much needed. So,
thank you very much. Secretary Heidi Alvarez?
There is a green folder that is circulating around. If you could please cross out your name if you're a regular member. If you are subbing for someone, please write your name to the right of the person whose name you are subbing for. And if you are a guest or anyone else, you can please sign in on the very last page. Thank you.
I did forget one item on the, thank you very much, Heidi. I did forget one item on the chair report. Posted on the Senate website under documents, this has been posted this afternoon. Actually, there are two items. One is the faculty work-life survey, which you received just prior to this Senate meeting via Faculty All, and then an email to the University Senate list as well. So that information is posted. Please review that. There's some interesting results in that. So please take a look at that. It's always interesting to see what faculty are thinking and about the climate here at WKU. So that is online as well as in that email. The other thing that is posted online is a memo from President Ransdell. He received the resolution or the recommendation that Senate sent forward from Faculty Welfare and Professional Responsibility on the faculty handbook and approval of the faculty handbook by the Board of Regents. So he's received and accepted that that recommendation. He did provide a response memo, and that has been posted online under the Senate documents for you to take a look at as you would like to. I think that is it. Okay, so the next order of business is Coalition of Senate and Faculty Leadership for Higher Education. I know Molly is here somewhere. I'm looking for her. There she is.
The COSFL did meet on March 7th. For those of you all, since we have a full house in here that don't know what COSFL is, it's a Coalition of Senate Faculty Leadership, and we all work and meet with the CPE a couple of times a semester to see what's going on. We met with the budget people from CPE, and it's a little bit late now because I think most of you all know from reading your email from President Ransdell yesterday of where the budget stands right now. We spent probably the next hour and a half after that discussing the fact that we are beginning to not be a state-supported schools anymore. This came up last year with the Senate, and I guess now there's not a whole lot we can do about the budget, but we have another couple of years to think about the fact that we're 25% supported by the state now, and we're getting extremely close to not being a state university, but more of a state-affiliated university. And we still have to go by state rules because we are a state university, and that became our conversation for about an hour and a half after that. So that's about all I have to report. If anybody has anything, comment, please feel free to email me, and I will get that back to COSFL.
Thank you very much, Molly. AAU President Eric Reed, anything to report? All right, thanks very much. Moving on to our advisory panel, Regent Minter.
Okay. Obviously, there's a lot going on. If you've been on email, you know that. So I'm going to take it one thing at a time. And then if anybody has any questions afterwards, I'm happy to answer those as well. Going back to February 25th. On February 25th, I and three other members of the Board of Regents went to South Central Kentucky Night to meet with the General Assembly in Frankfort and to visit with them and to lobby for the university's funding priorities. And I do think that was, even though the result has not been what we hoped for, we can't pretend that it was. Again, I think this is always time well spent when you can work one-on-one, meet members of the legislature, talk to them about the priorities. And the overwhelming sense I got from the conversations was that certainly in the House, at least, there are many who would like to have fully funded the university's request and the funding for state universities, and there's not a new revenue stream to do it. So, you know, it's a debatable point, but it does speak to some of the problems of having an antiquated revenue system in this state and what the implications are for educational funding. So those were good conversations, even though we did not at all get what we wanted, and you can't you know, we can't disguise our disappointment on that. But again, time well spent with our legislative body. The legislative committee on which I serve representing the Senate has been a very interesting exercise this year, and I think it's been a very good one. And Provost Emsley, had you planned to address House Bill 333 in your report? Okay. There are several things, and I'll put this in my report, several things that impact faculty, and one of the ones that we've been tracking closely is House Bill 333, which would change some of the conditions of people for people going into transitional retirement. You would not, someone going into transitional retirement, which it does appear this bill is going to become law, transitional retirees would have in the KTRS program, program would have to wait until they were 60 in order to enter transitional retirement. Now, you could retire at any point under KTRS rules, but in order to enter transitional retirement, you would have to reach 60. If you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them. And I know that our HR folks have been talking to, there are a couple of affected faculty, and our HR folks have been talking with them. But that's the kind of good dialogue that we've been having in that committee, and I feel much more grounded in understanding what the university tracks, what we take positions on, why we take those positions, and again, when the session's over, I'll write a wrap-up report and post that on the Senate website so you can see how everything worked in the sausage factory this time. The last time I talked with you, I told you that I had asked at the Board of Regents meeting for Athletic Director Todd Stewart to provide to the board a report on football 6 years out. Again, as this continues to be a major expenditure, because football and athletic program is funded not only by revenue from generated by athletics and ticket sales and soft drinks, but it's also funded by our base budget here at the university and with student fees. It's heavily subsidized by student fees. And in these difficult economic times and in times when we're having enrollment issues, those are not small things. So I'd asked for a written report, and the board did receive that. It contained a lot of interesting information, but I'll be asking for further clarification because the information I got was on revenue and attendance only. And the piece of the puzzle that I still don't have is that about expenditures and funding mechanisms. So I'm going to be following up and asking about what percentage of the budget over time from 2006 to the present is involved with base budget. How much of that are student fees? Again, student fee piece matters because the CPE considers student fees to be part of tuition. It's just how much a student pays. If you're paying a fee of some kind, that's money that we cannot ask for in tuition that cannot go to pay for salaries, keeping the lights on, etc. So I'll be asking for clarification about that. HAF, Hilltopper Athletic Foundation, their contribution to this discussion is not at all transparent, so I'd like to get that data as well. But I do think it's the beginning of a really good conversation because it's important for the Board of Regents to understand, particularly in these difficult budget times, what is going on here. That gets me to the president's email, which all of you have undoubtedly read, which outlines the budget realities, and that's what has been communicated to me as well. And my understanding of this is, again, the Board of Regents becomes part of the budgeting process at the end, not the beginning. That doesn't mean that things can't be brought up, and I want to hear from you about that. And I know that our Budget Council representatives need to hear from you about this. But my understanding is that the process of building the budget will begin in earnest probably in April, although obviously plans are being made. I leave it to the provost to address the issue of enrollment numbers and budget shortfall from that, but I trust that the Board of Regents will also be getting a report so that we also understand those issues. And we're meeting in committees a week from tomorrow. So, again, I hope that we'll be getting that information because, as you see, we've got a $3.1 million shortfall. So, to summarize, as the university deals with the realities, and you've already seen the first of these realities with the message about health services, I hope you will join me in reminding our leaders about the primacy of the academic mission as difficult choices have to be made. There are several moments in the past, and could point to a number of them, some more important than the others, that if different choices had been made, then we might be in a less difficult situation right now. So the time has come to focus on what is essential to the academic mission and to make wise choices that do not have serious consequences in the future for the academic mission and for faculty and students. As always, I want you to communicate with me if you have any concerns, and I will keep you and the Board of Regents informed about what I'm hearing. The Board of Regents does meet a week from tomorrow at 8:45 in the morning in the Regents Room. I have not seen the agenda yet. I should be getting it tomorrow, and I hope it will be posting publicly tomorrow, but you are always welcome to contact me about anything that is on your mind. One of the things we'll be doing very shortly, the board has completed individual evaluations of the president, and the board has received your comments from the Faculty Welfare Survey. I thank you, as always, for your participation in the process, for your eloquent and thoughtful responses, and I'm happy to take any questions you have, if you have any. And if you don't, that's fine, too. You know how to get hold of me, okay? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Patty. Moving on to our provost, Gordon Emsley.
Good afternoon. And can I do a quick follow-up with Patty? It's at Hospital 333. Do you know where that is at this point?
It's in the Senate, and I think it's projected to pass.
Yeah. And the issue about the 60 or over relates to a prearrangement with the employer. So it does not, in fact, prohibit someone 60 or less leaving and then returning at a later date to a part-time employment, traditional retirement type capacity. It just cannot be prearranged prior to the retirement of that individual. So we'll work through that. It's March, April. It's first day of spring. It's a great time to be on campus. So hands up all those who were not fully assured at Michio Kaku's Monday evening cultural enhancement series talk. And that's consistent because Van Meter was the fullest it's ever been. It was just crammed. This, of course, is Reach Week. We have nearly 400 students presenting their work on Student Research Day on Saturday. And the forensics team just returned from another 10-in-a-row victory in the International Forensics Association tournament in Paris, France. They just arrived at like 1 a.m. this morning, so congratulations to them. So recommendations from the February Senate meeting all approved. That's the Graduate Council recommendation, the UCC recommendation, the Colonnade policy change, the Colonnade courses. And you just heard about President Renzo has posted his response to the faculty handbook recommendation. And in regard to the other resolution, which is a segue into the Budget Council, the Provost Budget Council has now met three times. We've had some lively discussions, and at the most recent meeting, we just distributed a sheet, and I'll make that available regarding the growth in both the number and salaries of positions at various levels of the university. What we call E10s, 20s, 30s, 40s. 10s are executive, administrative, 20s are faculty, 30s are professional, non-faculty, and 40 is support staff. And there's some interesting trends there. But on average, over the last 10 years, faculty numbers increased by 2.5% per year, while salaries have increased only 1.6% per year. Per faculty member, total of 4.1% annual increase in expenditures. For example, some concern was expressed in that group about the growth, which is pretty significant in the EE30s, professional non-faculty. And I think the president's announcement today about the health service, and that will reduce that number actually quite considerably. I'm still waiting on names for the space committee. That's another committee I think is very important that we form as we evolve and space needs change. I think it's very important to have a committee together to assess these. So I request that from you. I will go back to the budget briefly. The highest priority on my list is making sure that as much of the fiscal 16 staffing plan as possible goes forward. As Regent Minter mentioned, there is about a $3 million what we call tuition shortfall. I want to stress that that's really not entirely a tuition shortfall. That's a combination of things. It's a something due to drop in enrollment. It's also due to tuition going to places other than the central fund. Doctoral tuition does not go to the central fund. We have a nursing health services expansion at the health complex downtown, and some tuition goes directly there and does not show up in the central fund. It's increases in expenditures on scholarships. It's increases in mandated waivers that the state requires us to provide for certain students. All of that together creates this approximately $3 million gap. That plus dollars for for the state budget cut, plus dollars for a raise program contributes to the overall budget deficit. As you're aware, we had a very lean fiscal year 15 staffing plan that will allow academic affairs to weather this fairly well. Haven't got it totally figured out yet, and the committee, the budget committee is working with me on that to try and, stress priorities moving forward. Any questions on that budget process? I'm being not intentionally vague, but the final numbers just aren't in yet, pending what happens in Frankfurt and so on. But again, highest priority, move the staffing plan forward. Okay, then I'll say one of the recommendations and that committee has made is that we have some kind of long-term plan to address the action plan goal of approximately a 15% increase in faculty compensation from now through 2018, the end of the plan. And we're working on formulating such a plan, and with the critical issue of providing a merit raise pool at some point. Now, if you do 15% over 5 years, that's about 3% per year. To have a meaningful 4-5% merit raise pool, it follows that you probably couldn't do that every year. And one of the possibilities I've been asked to consider, and the president will meet with that committee, if there's committee members here, I've asked him this afternoon, he's willing to meet and discuss such a long-range planning exercise, would involve things like maybe cost of living adjustment some years and a much more meaningful merit raise pool in other years. So that those discussions are progressing, and I think sort of fairly well. On the enrollment side, there is a new director of admission. There are two candidates interviewing, one today and one early next week, and I encourage you to participate in those because enrollment growth is key to the future success of this. And last, but by absolutely no means least, faculty awards reception is in this building on April 10th, and invite you all to attend. Thank you.
Thank you. And moving on to our SGA President, Kiana Boca.
Good afternoon. SGA has continued dialogues with legislators in Frankfurt as well, pushing our position on the budget cuts. And we have sent a resolution with 7 out of 8 state universities in the Commonwealth supporting our Board of Student Body President's position as well. And that's been sent this week. Our SGA will be at the Council for Post-Secondary Education meeting this Saturday, and we'll be listening in to what the tuition cap will be in their what's on their radar also. Also, spring elections are coming up April 8th and 9th on TopNet, and we will have a officer debate on April 2nd. So I encourage, it will be a swipeable event, so I encourage all faculty and staff to encourage students to go to that. It's a great opportunity to see politics on campus also. And applications for officers and senators are due this coming Tuesday, March 25th. It's Tuesday, 5 o'clock, by 5 o'clock in our office. So I encourage students to apply for those positions also. And one other thing, SGA is planning a NCAA viewing for the Lady Topper basketball team this Saturday. Their tournament is in Waco, Texas. So for many people who can't go out there, we're having a viewing on campus, and it's open to the WKU community, alumni, faculty, staff, students. Everyone's welcome to join us. It will be in Grice Hall Auditorium on the second floor. So I encourage you to come and bring a red towel. And that's all. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Moving on to our standing committee reports and recommendations, Graduate Council, Beth.
I move approval of the February Graduate Council report.
Is there any discussion over that report? Okay. Graduate faculty only for the vote, please. All those in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks very much.
I actually have an announcement. Our April 10th Graduate Council meeting has been moved back to 2 o'clock to allow those members who received faculty awards to attend the faculty awards meeting.
All right. Thanks very much.
Like the chair.
Moving on to the University Curriculum Committee, Ashley.
Yes, I move to approve the report from February 27th from the UCC.
All right. Is there any discussion on that?
There is a slight change in wording. Let me pull that up. Under 2.1, it was originally stated the title of the program was changed by the UCC upon request from the deans of the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences. It needs to be clarified that the title of the proposed program was changed by the UCC per the passage of a motion made from the floor.
Okay, thanks very much. Is there any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of approval of the report with the slight amendment there, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thanks very much. We also have policy items.
Move the approval of the two policies from the February agenda.
Okay. Yes.
Here we go. Under point three, the rationale, the statement is made that the Colonnade program is more heavily on the humanities and that the social and behavioral sciences only have 3 hours, when in fact it's 6 hours. So I don't see any need to revise these proposal itself. I would like the minutes to have that correction.
Oh, okay. So the proposals are fine.
Yeah,
the policy proposals are fine.
In the minutes along with it, I want to point out that it has 6 hours in the first 30.
Okay. So that was the UCC minutes then. Okay. Thanks very much. Is there any further discussion on these policy items? Hearing no further yes, I'm sorry. Didn't see your hand. Oh. Hey, it's like an auction. You wave that paddle, we call on you. All right. The chair position is sold. Yes, thank you. All right. Hearing no further discussion on those policy items, all those in favor of approval of both of those, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thanks very much. Moving on to the academic quality report. Allison, are you here? Okay, is there any discussion over this report? Okay, hearing no discussion on this report, all those in favor of approval, please say aye. Any opposed? Thanks very much. Moving on to the Faculty Welfare and Professional Responsibility Report. Tucker.
I move for approval of the Faculty Welfare Report.
Okay, and any discussion over this report?
Yes.
I just have a question. Is this report a report of something that's being proposed, or is this something already done?
The report is just from our previous meeting. It's just a report of our previous meeting. The policy item, which is just proposed, and it's been endorsed, I guess, by the Faculty Welfare Committee, and it's endorsed also by the Senate Executive Committee, mm-hmm. and it's only proposed at this point.
Okay. Well, there are at least two of us here from the Department of Communication to express concern about the impact of this proposal on First Amendment rights. Any sort of restriction or prohibition of what can be said in any context on the basis of the content of what is said is an infringement on First Amendment rights, and I think this proposal, I'm speaking specifically of the proposal about policy of public prayer, I'm sure it's well-intentioned, because I think we pride ourselves here at Western upon our diversity and our sensitivity to that diversity. But I think this is a problematic policy.
Okay. Well, Tucker, would you like to respond to that?
Just first thing, are the policy and the report separate?
The policy...
They're posted as separate items, so should we approve the report?
They are posted as separate items, but within our reports, other than I think we had separated out policy items from UCC previously, but our parliamentarian may be able to help us with this, but I believe that this is included within the report of faculty welfare. Is that correct?
Normally it would be, but since on the agenda the policy items are listed separately, it strikes me that that policy can be voted on.
Okay. Because we've done this previously and included it within the report, I know, and just linked them out separately, but we will certainly follow that, guys. So at this point, let's just go ahead and deal with the report, and then we will deal with the policy item separately. So is there any further discussion on the report from faculty welfare? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor of approval of the report from faculty welfare and professional responsibility, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the policy item then, which is the discussion that we heard previously, so further discussion on that item.
Okay. So I guess a quick background on the issue. There was a recruitment dinner in Hopkinsville, I think a recruitment event, where a public prayer, obviously sectarian, was given, and the issue was then brought by a faculty member to us in the Faculty Welfare Committee. That was after an email discussion, I think, with WKU Council, and she recommended that faculty member bring it to us for review and potential policy creation, right? And so... So that we examined the issue. One of our committee members brought up the fact that Clemson had this policy on its books, and so we really just adapted. Seeing as that we thought it should be a policy, I think there was a member in the communications department that emailed me regarding this, and his concerns were the lemon test should be enough, right? The lemon test is the... I had to look it up. I didn't know it either, which is why we thought there should be a policy. Right? The Lemon test was Lemon versus Kirchman, and it established a three-pronged system for determining if a practice or policy was constitutional. The Lemon test, the three prongs were: it must have the government's action must have a secular purpose. One. Two, it must not have a primary effect on either advancing or inhibiting religion. And three, it must not result in an excessive government entanglement with religion. And so this, I guess, was passed in 1971, was decided in 1971. So we thought that, even though the legislation is there that would prohibit this, prohibit sectarian prayers at public events from a public university, that... a written policy should probably be in place. That was our semi-consensus
Thank you, Tucker.
There.
And yes, microphone. Could you use the microphone, please? And yes, and state your name.
Sure, Polachek Theater Dance. I'm wondering what counts as a public event, because I'm assuming there are student groups that are religious based on campus, and if that counts, that seems like this would be awfully restrictive.
Right. We considered that, and that's the faculty member that took issue with the dinner and brought it to us wrote his own suggested policy, and we thought that it was a bit too restrictive the way it was written. It could have been construed as limiting just about any group, student group and anything that you maybe use WKU in its title or Hilltoppers in its title. So we went with the Clemson University policy because it seemed much less specific and much less open to interpretation, right? So it was neither prohibitive nor, prohibitive of organizations that weren't actually affiliated with the university.
So, yes, ma'am. Microphone. Can you get the microphone, please, and identify yourself?
I teach courses on Christianity.
What is your name again, please?
Bella. Bella from Thank Religious you. Studies. So, and part of the difficulty is what students come to courses on religion, assuming is religion, in a state university. So I think I would agree with this argument that a clear policy that separates prayer from the classroom would be what works, kind of Thomas Jefferson type model of teaching religion without making it difficult for non-Christians who attend these kind of classes that teach. It really does make teaching harder to have a public policy on prayer.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion or comment? Tucker, did you have a response to that before?
To which?
To that comment or before we move?
I mean, you were supported by the Bible?
Bella? I would say no prayer in public places.
So you would say no prayer at all, or?
As an educational being, classrooms, no.
Right, right.
In public events, no.
In public events, right.
Right.
Well, as the policy as it's written allows for prayer. I mean, so I'm just asking for clarification. Do you support the policy as it's written, saying that it says prayer would be allowed, but non-sectarian prayer specifically? So. Okay. 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 Well, I think that the best practices that I've reviewed, and some of the case law that I've reviewed, which I'm obviously not a lawyer, and this is as much case law as I've ever looked at. Right. So, a lot of it says that it doesn't want to prohibit any prayer. I think the sticky point is that you want to still allow the possibility for prayer while making clear that the prayer should be non-sectarian. Right? If you say no prayer is allowed, then I think that's when the First Amendment issues really kind of rear their heads.
Hi. Microphone and recognition, please.
I think the issue with, I think all a lot of several religions use prayer, so it's not so using the word prayer doesn't endorse.
Hey, gotta have the floor and gotta have the microphone. So we're trying to do this for our secretary. Secretary Alvarez would like to make sure that she can hear things that are going on in the meeting when she goes back and does the minutes. I know we have a comment waiting from off the floor as well. So, Dr. Miller, I think you have a comment.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was off the floor, but that's okay.
It's amazing how people float out there.
I guess so. When I read this policy, I was confused. Quite frankly, I don't know what non-sectarian prayer is. And from my understanding of what it is, and I could be totally off base, non-sectarian prayer to me is no prayer at all. And that is a huge problem for me. As a Christian, and I'm sure many of you are Christians, when I give a prayer, I don't want to be restricted in my prayer to not using the word God or Holy Father if I'm a Catholic or something of that nature. So other institutions that have non-denominational prayers will have, in one case, they may have a rabbi giving a prayer or a priest giving a prayer, and I don't have any problem with that at all. But don't put strings on me as a Christian when I give a prayer. And so when I see the term non-sectarian prayer, to me, that's putting strings and tying my hands, and that for me is no prayer at all.
Thank you. Other comments? Tucker, a quick response, and we've got Dr. Deidel.
Okay. Well, Dr. Miller, to that I would say that the policy would only reflect, only affect public prayer at a public event. So it wouldn't really restrict you as an individual. However, it would restrict you as an official of WKU giving a prayer at a public event.
Dr. Dinal?
I serve for 5 years on the Board of Regents, and at every event that we had, it opened with a prayer, always a Christian prayer, and that's a faith community that I do not participate in any longer. And so if you want to talk about strings, I have to say for 5 years I sat there feeling like a hypocrite, because I'm sitting there sort of looking out over a crowd of bowed heads thinking, well, this really doesn't speak to me, and I'm not sure why we're doing this. So the no strings works both ways. I mean, it's not just people who have specific faith, but people who are outside those communities as well.
Thank you very much. Let's see if we've got some further comment from senators. And then, yes, Dr. Miller. Microphones? Is there a microphone at your table? Oh, you're going to use that one.
Steve Miller, Education. This is historically one of the most divisive and difficult issues to define in a way that is adequate legally and in terms of various constituencies and different groups. It would seem to me that this is not the forum nor the place to go into the intricacies of the back and forth. I would suggest that maybe we could come up with a committee that would include some legal scholars, the university lawyer, and some others with some expertise in this area, have them revisit this and bring something back after people who have some knowledge about this could get together and come up with something apart from the back and forth of a faculty-senate debate.
I appreciate that. I think that faculty welfare has considered this and has discussed this at some length, had some back and forth and some legal input into this, but that is my take on what has happened within faculty welfare. So, Dr. Minter.
Point of clarification, if I'm correct, Tucker, but I just wanted to make sure this was correct for the record. My understanding is that the original issue was brought to faculty welfare by a faculty member who is also a lawyer and drafted a pretty extensive brief on the subject, which I was also openly copied on. So, and he's right. I mean, his brief is absolutely correct as far as current constitutional law on First Amendment and prayer issues. It was spot on, and you're not going to find any court in the United States that's going to disagree with the interpretation. The policy is brought forward. It does allow for non-sectarian prayer at events that aren't actually state-sponsored. But if I'm also correct, this was brought originally to University Council, who then directed it to faculty welfare. Is that all correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, I mean, that was the University Council's response to that. And faculty welfare, or faculty members in general, do have the power to draft a policy. I'm sure Provost Emsley could point you toward the how to draft a policy spot on the website. But I don't know that having a committee would come to any different conclusion other than to, you know, create a cooling off period. But the point is, and as someone who's a legal historian and teaches this stuff every spring semester, the faculty member's right. I mean, we are currently non-compliant with the constitutional standard on on prayer. And it doesn't preclude non-sectarian prayer. It doesn't preclude student-led prayer. It doesn't preclude any religious organization on campus for having any kind of sectarian prayer that they wish to have. But we are currently non-compliant. And as a member of the University Governance Board, I can tell you that there's more than one regent who is really quite concerned about this practice as, you know, the oversight body for this institution.
I will agree with you, though, that this is a very divisive and long-debated issue. In the case law and documents that I've reviewed, there are plenty of decisions on middle school, high school, middle school, secondary schools. I think there is a hesitation to make rulings, I think, by judges on the university age students, faculty, because they take into account the maturity level of the students and assume that they would be less susceptible to coercion, right? And I think the coercion issue that maybe has been mentioned, the feeling of coercion that's mentioned maybe with the Board of Regents prayer is a point of fact that I think one of the issues was students going to graduation, for example. If there is a public prayer, the graduation itself is optional, but students want to go to the graduation, and if a public prayer is given, they may feel compelled to participate. And I'd also, I think the ruling about constitutionality, it's more likely to be decided coercive if it's a smaller group as opposed to a larger group. So, I mean, there are a lot of gray, but I will agree that it's a long debated issue.
All right. And
don't
yes.
Have any
and please recognize yourself as well. What is your name?
Ismail Jerry from the Management Department. The issue is WKU is not a private school, so in terms of prayers or new type of WKU events, have to comply with whatever the state wants. We're not a private Catholic school. If that's the case that someone wants to go with whatever the religious prayer is, then we should have, I don't know, some religious symbols in these classes too. If you ever been, I don't know, Notre Dame or Duquesne or some other Catholic school, you have all those religious symbols or prayers and everything because it's a private school. But WKU is not a private school. So that's simple as
all right, thank you. Yes, just a few more comments. Microphone, thank you.
The constitutional right not to be religious, not to kind of do God talk or anything, whatever to this prayer is. So I would be interested in what goes on in this non-sectarian prayer if the general consensus culturally is to have public prayer. And I know it happens, but it hinders teaching Christianity historically as a religion that can be taught to believers and non-believers. So I have an interest in what happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion from senators. I know we have another comment from a guest. Did you have a follow-up comment as well? I know. Okay.
Yes. Well, I suspect that constitutional law is a little bit above the pay grade of any of us here, and I don't think we want to get involved in my lawyer says, your lawyer says. I'd rather go back to the spirit of the resolution, and I think that Robert Dytle's comments may have directed us in the right direction. Because it says we are a multicultural community, and because students, faculty, and staff are of many different religious persuasions. Okay, this, I don't think the intention of this was to prescribe how we pray. I think the intention of this policy was to fully endorse the multiculturalism that we experience here at Western. And Robert said that in all of those Regents, Board of Regents meetings, it was always a Christian prayer. I think that was a mistake, because while this university's faculty and students are majority Christian, they're certainly not 100% Christian. I don't understand why there hasn't been a prayer led by a Jew or a Muslim or a Hindu during all of those Board of Regents meetings. I think there should have been. The way that we honor and celebrate our diversity is not by pretending that we are not diverse, that we are all the same thing. We have Martin Luther King Day celebration because we are not all African American, but some of us are, and it's important to recognize that. We had St. Patrick's Day earlier this week. I don't know how many Irish we have here. I'm not Irish, but I certainly found no offense in a day celebrating Irish culture and traditions and so forth. So I think the way that we truly exemplify our celebration of our multiculturalism is by allowing all the cultures to be represented, not to homogenize them all into one that's not recognizable as much of anything. I don't know how to go about a policy that would say every so often, whoever leads a prayer wherever we are really ought to not be Christian, probably ought to be Muslim or Jewish or something else. But I think that we know that in our own classrooms and in our own policies, we're able to achieve results that don't have to be spelled out in so many rules and laws. So I would say the spirit of this resolution is right. Just the way that it's going about trying to achieve that is really not the right way. A non-sectarian prayer, I would echo what Dr. Miller said, is really no prayer at all. And so, I mean, it's how would it sound? I mean, what would you say? If you were asked to pray and you were told it's got to be non-sectarian, what would those words sound like? I've got a feeling it would come out sounding something more like wishful thinking spoken out loud to nothing or no one in particular. I don't think that will achieve much, but I do think that we can build on the spirit of this policy to truly incorporate a multicultural perspective.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes, Jennifer. Thank you very much. I know there's one more comment.
Aaron Wickman is my name. I was going to say, as a non-Christian, when I hear Christian prayers, it does sound like wishful thinking. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. It doesn't make any sense to me. So it cuts many ways. Yeah.
Thanks very much. Okay, one further comment. Yes.
Okay. The issue that we're dealing... Oh, Barbara Feen, College of Education. The issue that we're dealing with is separation of church and state. And I strongly feel that if this policy were taken to court, it would not meet the legal definitions for separation of church and state. We are a public institution. The courts have ruled positively towards a moment of silence. They have not ruled positively to any type of prayer in public institution-sanctioned events.
Thank you very much. Tucker, did you have one final response for this before we...
Sure, I can speak to Barbara. Well, just to that, I'm... Again, no lawyer, but the document that I'm reading here it speaks about prayer at a graduation ceremony, and specifically an invited speaker, an invited prayer giver. And it says that circuit court decisions make clear that a public college or university may include a non-sectarian invocation and or benediction as part of a large institutional event such as a commencement or an athletic contest. So I think there have been case law where prayer, as long as it is non-sectarian, is allowed, right, is constitutional. That being said, I think the big issue with First Amendment rights is that it doesn't endorse any specific religion, nor does it entangle religion with the state sponsor, with the public university. So I think just to your point about the offering multicultural prayers or prayers from different religions, I think that, I don't know, I mean, I'm just speculating, that may offer the appearance of even entanglement, even with multiple religions, as was pointed out by Jennifer Hanley. If one religion feels left out at that point, then they are discriminated against, and there might be issues with that also.
Thank you, Tucker. Is there any further comment from any viewpoints that have not been yet recognized? Any ideas that have not yet been covered? Okay. Without any further discussion, we will go ahead and take the vote on this. We do have a motion to approve this policy on the floor and a second, I believe. We do have a second on that, don't we, Heidi? Thank you. I remembered the motion. I couldn't remember the second. Sorry. It is brought by committee. That's true. You're right. You're exactly right. It confused me as coming up after the report. All right. And then with the subsequent discussion. So all those in favor of approval of the Faculty Welfare and Professional Responsibility policy item on public prayer, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Can we have a hand count of opposed, please? Okay. Do you need a? Do you need? Yeah. So let's go ahead and take the hand count of our in favor of our ayes, please. Okay, so we are 29 in favor and 11 opposed. Okay, 29 in favor and 11 opposed, so the policy does pass. General Education has no report.
Real quickly, point of thing, since this is a general university policy, could you send it to Julia McDonald, Chief of Staff, for the President's consideration?
Julia McDonald? Okay, I'll get that specific one from you. Thank you. Next item of business is the Colonnade Implementation Committee. We do have a policy item. Is there someone, is there a representative from Colonnade here for this? Yes, Robert. All right. And I guess we need a second on this. We're not technically a standing committee yet with Colonnade. So can I get a second on that, please? Thank you very much. Any discussion over the Colonnade Implementation Committee policy item for revision of international students in foreign language? Any discussion? Okay. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of that policy, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thanks very much. I don't believe we have any old business on tap. We do have some new business that is coming around to you. And Eric, if you would like to bring up that new business, please.
Hello. This is a pretty straightforward resolution. I'd like to create a new standing committee of the Senate that would deal with budget and finances. The reason for this, I think, is pretty clear. There are a couple of reasons. One is that we're often asked to comment as a body about budget and financial issues, but we don't have any formal way of creating comment, except to sit in a meeting and react to things that are presented to us. So this would give this a more structure. I'd also like to point out, just as a point of information, that we're currently the only state university that does not have a Senate Budget Committee. And certainly this will give a little bit more structure to the faculty voice on these issues. And if you're interested, I can give you a brief. I'll just tell you. I drafted some language that would be going to the SEC in a couple of weeks that would essentially make a committee that looks very much like all the other standing committees, a representative from each college, one student representative, three at-large representatives, and an ex officio member from the provost's office, and that would have responsibilities pretty widely designed to look into and comment on budget matters and make recommendations to the Senate.
So before us right now, we have the resolution to create a University Senate Budget and Finance Committee. Should this approve, then we will have subsequently potentially the charter change that would come through with the two required readings after this. So on the table right now, we do have the resolution to create a University Senate Budget and Finance Committee. Was there a motion for that? Did you make a motion for that?
I move you approve this.
All right. Thanks very much. Any discussion on this particular resolution? Okay. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the resolution to create a University Senate Budget and Finance Committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thanks very much. Do expect that wording on alteration of the charter will come through starting next month for the first reading. Thank you very much, Eric. Is there any further new business? Okay. Hearing no further new business, we will move on to the final items. And I've already mentioned our information items for today. Please take a look at those online. Also, a couple of other things, again, online. Just as a reminder, we do have the Faculty Work Life Survey, which is available. I'll go ahead and send out a link to that Senate Documents page, because that will provide you not only with the information on the 2013-2014 Faculty Work Life Survey, but also give you the access to the previous Work Life Survey so that you can do any comparisons that you would like to do and see how things may have changed. I believe our last one was done in 2012. For that, so I think it's been maybe a couple of years since that has been done. I think that was the most recent one that was posted online previously, but those are posted now. So I'll send out a link to that so you can see that, and then also again the memo response from President Ransdell on the recommendation regarding the faculty handbook. And I would suggest that you read thoroughly kind of both of those items. And again, I'll send out a link for that. Is there any further business? All right, hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn? A second? All those in favor? Thank you.
Are we heading down there?